Ladies and gentlemen, the Metropolitan Washington old-time radio players are presenting a recreation of a long-lost episode of the series Quiet Please. Quiet Please was on the air from the summer of 1947 to the summer of 1949, first on ABC, then on Mutual. Quiet Please has been described as one of the most thought-provoking and adult of radio shows. It specialized in putting everyday people into extraordinary circumstances. It's important to note that the programs were most often told in first person, with flashbacks of dramatic vignettes, often involving no more than two or three people. Our program tonight, 100,000 Diameters, was long considered lost. All that was known for decades was the title. Then, a few years ago, the missing script was discovered. Our program was originally aired at 8 p.m. on Monday, June 7, 1948. Now, imagine you are in Mutual Studio 15 in New York. The words you are about to hear have not been spoken in almost 60 years.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet Please, which is written by Willis Cooper and directed by Edgar Farr Russell III, and which features Jack French. Quiet Please for tonight is called 100,000 Diameters.
Just sit perfectly still. Better keep your hands in your lap there, and don't move your feet. Just be still. It'll go away in a second. All you have to do is play dead, and don't look at it. Just sit still. It's fascinating. You look at it, and you see all kinds of things. Hasn't got any eyes, but it sees you. It hears you. Wiggles along the floor toward you. Thanks, Jean.
You know better than to sit and look at the thing.
Sure, but you get carried away. Thanks for smacking me.
Don't mention it.
You didn't need to crack my bridge work, though.
You wouldn't have had any bridge work in another couple of seconds.
Yes, thanks. Where'd it go?
By the chair.
I see it. Well, let's put the salt solution over there. Maybe it'll crawl back in.
All right. That's close enough for me.
Me too. Well now, friend, you're all right. I say it won't hurt you now. Sorry to scare you, but...
Judd.
What?
Don't touch him.
Huh? Why?
Look at him.
Good gosh, the man's dead. Now, I want to tell you about that because you ought to know. My name is Judd. Vern R. Judd. Not Vernon. Vern. I'm a histologist and bacteriologist. Not a doctor, not a mad scientist, nothing spectacular, nothing up my sleeve. I look through microscopes and make various kinds of reports on what I see. Photographs, drawings, qualitative and quantitative analyses. You see, you bring me a specimen, I look at it and I dye it different colors and I count the various kinds of bacteria I see and so on. So many Staphylococcus aureus, so many polymorphonuclear cells, and so on. I don't know what to tell you to do with them or anything of that sort. I'm merely an observer and a reporter. That's all. Jean is my laboratory assistant. Cornell, 2 years in the lab at Cook County, 3 years with me. The dead man there in the chair, he was a messenger for an analytical laboratory I've done some work for. Unimportant, although I agree I was a little shocked at his sudden kicking off. I don't know his name, and we've got to get rid of him, Jean.
You're telling me.
Yes. Yes. Now, I realize you're probably saying to yourself, I'm a pretty hardened customer, and that Jean is too. that we've got no feelings, that probably we're murderers. Well, friend, disabuse yourself of any ideas like those, will you? It's too bad this fellow died. But what we're trying to do is keep a lot of other people from dying the way he got it. And we haven't got time to fool around with emotions over one man. You don't agree with me? One of the people we're trying to save, mister, is you. Some of the others are your family, your friends, practically everybody you know. So take it easy, will you? And don't jump up and down and wave your arms. We'll save you, I hope.
It's back in the saline solution now, Judd.
Well, fasten the lid down tight then.
It'll stay this time.
Good. Don't let me scare you too much yet. I started to tell you about things in particular. Yes, it killed the messenger. I don't know how. I think I know, but no, I don't know what it is. I think I know, though, but all set, Jean?
All set. Judd.
No, you can't pour sodium hydroxide solution in that container.
Please, Judd.
No, you'll just kill it.
That's what I want to do.
That won't be a great help, Jean, you know that.
Yes, I suppose so.
Because, you see, Jean and I have been hoping we could get married one day. We haven't gotten around to it yet because we've been busy, all that sort of thing, you know. But, well, let's just see how this thing comes out first. I guess it was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, Jean, that we were over at Kurt's place? Yes, about 2 weeks ago. Kurt and I went to school together, and we're both in the same well, I guess business is a better term. Only Kurt's research is a little different from mine. He got carried away by the electron microscope, worked under Zworykin at Princeton, and got to be quite a boy with the electron job.
You'd better tell him about the electron microscope, Judd. The whole story is
That's right. Well, you know how an ordinary microscope works, of course. A combination of objective and ocular lenses that magnify whatever's on the stage. That's all. Well, the ordinary optical microscope naturally depends on light waves, and there's a theoretical limit of resolving power inherent in it. In other words, you can't magnify everything beyond a certain limit. 5,000 diameters is about the practical limit. Higher magnifications just don't work. They don't magnify details. I haven't got the time to explain it to you. If you want to know more, look it up in a book on optics. That is, if you have the time. Well, Zworykin invented the electron microscope. Let's make it simple. He uses electronic fields instead of lenses, and his waves are shorter than light waves, so he can magnify many more times. Only you can't see by Zworykin's waves, so he put in a very simple device, a fluorescent screen, on which his waves produce an image, a visible image. And he gets enormous magnification, on the order of 10,000, 30,000, 100,000 diameters on his fluorescent screen. Unfortunately, what you see are cast shadows, but recently they've developed a way of spraying whatever they're looking at with chromium vapors from one side so that the projected image is apparently three-dimensional. It helps a lot in determining structures and so on, but the effect is only apparent, you see.
That's enough of the lecturing, Judd, isn't it?
Sure. Let's get down to cases now. Jean, come here and sit down. I don't want to kill that thing. Killing won't do a bit of good. Killing one won't do any good. We've got so much to find out while it's still alive.
I know, but all right.
It was a Wednesday night when we went over to Kurt's place, I think. We were playing three-handed gin rummy until about midnight, and we were eating crackers and jetost, you know, that wonderful Norwegian cheese, and drinking gin and tonic, which I suppose enough to make you see things without a microscope. And Kurt, it always took more than a mouthful of crackers and cheese to stop him.
I got it up to an even 100,000 diameters now, Judd, and I'm going to show you something.
He's talking about his new EM, Gene.
EM?
Electron microscope. A new one. With a couple of new gimmicks in it.
Like what?
Oh, some things.
Plays records?
Practically.
What have you got, Kurt?
Well, come on, I'll show you. Come on in the lab.
An electron magnetoscope takes up a good part of a small room. It looks like a modernistic drill press or one of those super science instruments you see in stupefying stories or something. The power unit takes up a lot of room, too. And the microscope itself stands taller than a man. This was the biggest one I'd ever seen, and it was different. Usually there's a bulge in the middle of the tube, about table height, with a number of holes through which you look down at the magnified image on the fluorescent screen. That part was missing on this one. Instead, there was a thing built into it that looked, well, something like a strange sort of coffin, and there was only one eyepiece leading into the coffin.
What's that thing, Kurt?
That's the eyepiece.
That your gadget?
No, this is my gadget.
That coffin thing?
Look into this ordinary microscope.
Yes.
You look, Judd.
So what?
Recognize it?
Looks like a piece of mosquito's wing.
It is. A piece exactly 1/10 of a millimeter square.
So?
Well, I want to show you something.
I've seen a mosquito's wing blown up to 100,000.
Oh, have you? Wait. Warm up the tubes.
Gene, go and get us a drink, will you?
Now, wait. Plenty of time for that later. I want you to watch.
Well, do something.
Keep your shirt on. Now we take the slide with the little mosquito wing, and we put it in here at the focus of the beam, and I run a simple saline solution in here in your coffin, Judd. And then, wait, better stand back a little way.
What are you going to do?
Watch.
What goes on?
Let me turn off the juice and then get this lid open. There.
What? What is it?
That, my friends, is your mosquito's wing, magnified 100,000 diameters.
And I'm telling you, what he threw onto the laboratory table, dripping with solution, was nothing less than a roughly square segment of wing. The veins, the fragments of muscles, the bony integument, and the web itself, a foot thick and as tough as plexiglass. And I thought, if the mosquito that it came from were magnified that many times, you figure it out for yourself. It'd be nearly half a mile long, and it'd stand a good 1,500 feet tall. You wonder that I shuddered? I don't know how Kurt did this incredible thing. I don't want to know. All I know is that he did magnify what had been a piece of living insect flesh into a chunk of tough leather and sinew more than a yard square. Yes, we needed our drinks then, and Kurt was in his glory.
Why, think of the commercial possibilities of this thing, Judd. My golly, every woman in the world will want a pair of mosquito skin gloves. Think of shoes made out of fly leather. They'd last forever. And armor for battleships, made out of the chitin from beetles. Why, one beetle would give you enough armor plate for 10 battleships. And bees, for example.
I don't want any bees 2 miles long, thank you.
No. You'd only have to magnify a bee about 1,000 times, about as big as a cat. Think of the honey production.
I don't want to think about it. It's horrible.
How about it, Judd?
It's incredible, Kurt.
There's the evidence.
And I lifted the soggy mass of alien flesh and blood that had once been as small as the head of a pin. Smaller. A 1/10 of a millimeter is 250th of an inch. And I thought of a world peopled by ravening insects that would dwarf our highest buildings and make a shambles out of the whole countryside in a few short hours. And I thought I had imagined the ultimate in stark horror. But I hadn't. For Jean was as badly shaken as I, and nervously she walked across to the instrument and looked down, shuddering, into the turgid water in the coffin at the base of the big microscope.
What is that stuff, Kurt?
What stuff?
In here.
In the tank? Saturated solution of sodium nitrite, spiked with alpha-dinitrophenol. Don't try and taste it.
Taste it? Good heavens, no.
Yes, you were right. There was something else in the tank. Something that stirred the heavy sludge at the bottom of the container. Something that slithered and rustled and bumped soggily against the stainless steel sides.
Something that didn't seem to have a shape. Something that seemed to be only a little denser than the solution it floated in. Something that smelled of death and decay and a kind of ghoulish hunger.
Something no human eye has ever seen before. Something that we knew existed, something we had all of us searched for these many years, that we might destroy it. You know what it is, of course, Judd.
It was on the mosquito wing, and of course we couldn't see it.
From its present size, it was about 25 ten-millionths of an inch before.
And alive.
Could you see its shape, Kurt?
It seems to change.
What do you think it is, Kurt?
It's a virus.
What kind do you suppose?
I don't know.
Well, if it gets out, we'll soon find out.
Nobody's ever seen one.
Of course not, because they're filterable. They pass through the finest porcelain filters, through everything. You can't isolate them.
You've done it.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. And I've got science's greatest gift to mankind right there in that tank. Judd. Nobody's ever been able to kill a virus because they couldn't see it. Now we've got it, and we'll experiment on it till we find out how to kill it. And when we find out, we'll find another and do the same thing. And by, I tell you, Judd, we're going to end disease in this world.
Yes, if...
What if it gets out of that tank?
It'll die, and we'll just have to start over. That ought to be easy, though. I mean, what's the matter with you, Jean?
You think it'll die if it gets out?
Of course.
How long was it on that mosquito wing?
Why, I mounted that this afternoon.
And it went through all that electronic stuff, and it isn't dead yet?
Well, but...
I know what she means, Kurt. Maybe you can't kill it.
Why, that's nonsense.
Is it?
I'll show you. If I can get one, I can always get another, Judd. I'll kill this specimen here just to show you. And then we can find another one and...
What are you doing, Kurt? Kurt!
Judd, it's gone.
And three frightened people searched that house from cellar to attic in the long, slow hours between midnight and dawn. And it was almost 7 a.m, broad daylight, that we found what had been Dinty, Kurt's Siamese cat. It didn't look much like a cat anymore. And alongside it, this thing, twice as large as it seemed when we first saw it, it seemed contented. We got pails and a broom and a fire shovel, and as we lifted it up, it weighed very little, but it was sticky, and we lifted it up, and it divided neatly into two parts, and the one that dropped on the floor started to move briskly away. It had fed, and it had reproduced, simply, efficiently, like all things near the bottom of the evolutionary scale. And for a moment, I thought I saw this gleam from the new thing on the floor, a gleam like the one I used to see sometimes in the blue eyes of Kurt's Siamese cat. And at last, we dumped both the things back into the tank and sat staring at each other in the cheerful sunshine that peered inquisitively through the window. We held the greatest enemy of mankind captive, and captive, he was 1,000 times greater enemy, 100,000 times.
We've got to kill him, Judd.
Yes.
But how, Kurt?
Poison?
What's poison to them?
We'll try everything.
We better start.
Burn them, maybe, Kurt?
Or starve them?
That one lived a long time without eating.
And as soon as it ate, it reproduced itself.
Well...
What, Jean?
I'm just wondering. We sit here and talk and...
What do you want to do?
Kurt, hadn't we better get someone who's done research on viruses, who knows something about them?
Who knows anything about them?
Patterson, at Cook County.
He'd think we were crazy.
He wouldn't, once he saw these things.
Maybe you're right, Jane.
Kurt, will you stop sitting there and do something? Don't you realize that the whole world is
going
to...
Don't blow your top, Judd. I'm just as scared as you are. Gene?
Hello, Cook County. Let me talk to Dr. Patterson, please. Urgent? Yes, I'm afraid it's very urgent.
Well, Doctor?
Doctor?
This is just plain amazing, boys.
Is it a virus?
Near as I can tell.
Well, how can we kill it then?
I don't know.
But look, Dr. Patterson...
I want one of these things, Kurt.
What for?
Well, I'm going to New York tonight, and I'm going to see Lamb and Sheehan and Mitchell, and if I can get Sandra Gerson, I'll get her, and we're going to do some fast experimenting on this brute. And if I'm not mistaken, Kurt, you are going to go down in medical history along with Pasteur and Ehrlich, and what about it? Can I have him?
Doctor, I hate to let you take him out of the lab. Can't you kill him here?
Dear boy, my colleagues would kill me if they ever heard of it. I'll take good care of him, don't you worry. What about it?
I'd let him, Kurt.
Yes, Kurt.
After all, Kurt, we're amateurs in this stuff. Dr. Patterson...
Okay. Only take him and kill him. Kill him, I tell you.
Gene, call the hospital and tell them to get me reservations on an airplane for New York right away. And then call Van Lenger and Antoine and get me one of those covered buckets fishermen use. And then get me long distance to New York. And then...
And so Gene and I drove the doctor out to the airport in his car, and we were mighty careful. Ogden Avenue is pretty bumpy, and we didn't want to spill what the doctor had in that pail. Kurt stayed at his place to keep an eye on the other one in the tank, and we promised to bring him back another bottle of gin when we came back. He was going to need it, he said. As a matter of fact, he didn't need it at all. Both Gene and I breathed a long sigh of relief when we got into the house. All this was a little too close to a nightmare for us. Gene was almost cheerful.
Kurt, Dr. Patterson got away all right. He's in the lab, I guess. Kurt, we brought your bottle. What? You sitting in the dark? Kurt? Oh!
The lid of the tank was open. Against it leaned a figure in the familiar brown gabardine suit Kurt had been wearing. But there was something strangely limp about the figure, and I stepped in front of Gene and seized the arm. There wasn't any arm. There wasn't anything at all except a brown gabardine suit that crumpled to the floor. And I picked it up, almost stupefied with horror, and something twitched near my foot, and there lay the thing. No, I won't tell you what it looked like. All I could see were Kurt's glasses lying across it, and the light shone on them in a way that... And then I felt that fascination. The thing seemed to draw me down to the floor toward it, and I couldn't help myself. And I bent down, and I put a hand toward it, and the light flashed from the glasses into my eyes, and I felt sick, and...
Judd!
And suddenly I was all right again, and I pulled myself up from the floor, and a seething rage just about overcame me. I beat at the thing with a chair. Nothing happened. It lay there. I kicked it. It didn't move. It might have been dead, except I know that it wasn't. And then Jean, she leaped to the lab table, and she struck a match, and she lit a Bunsen burner, and she came back and thrust it right against the thing on the floor. And you know what? It blazed up like high-test gasoline, and we knew we had it licked. But it divided again. And before she could reach the new thing with the fire, it had slithered away somewhere and was gone. And her victory was only half complete.
Well, anyway, we've got it now, Judd.
Yes, we've got it now. And someday we'll find out how to kill it. No, no, this one doesn't react to fire. Nothing we've done so far seems to do any good, but we're trying. We're trying. And we may succeed. I hope we succeed. We have to, or... Well, you see, it's much worse than you think. Dr. Patterson never got to New York. His plane crashed somewhere. I don't know exactly where. He had the thing with him, and everybody was killed in the crash. And those things reproduce after they feed. And we've got to find a way to kill this one. And then Gene and I are going hunting for the others. We hope we'll find them. Just sit still. Just sit perfectly still. Don't move your hands. Just relax.
The title of tonight's Quiet Please story was 100,000 Diameters. It was written by Willis Cooper and directed by Edgar Farr Russell III. And the man who spoke to you was Jack French.
Maury Cagle was Kurt. Ginger Moss played Gene. Dr. Patterson was Michael Haig. The music for Quiet Please was played by Albert Berman. Sound effects by Marsha Bush and Mark Bush. Our sound engineer is Chuck Langdon. And now for a word about next week, here is our director, Edgar Farr Russell III.
None of the characters you overheard tonight is based upon any living or dead person. Of course, they're all fictitious. Next week, Quiet Please will be called Not Responsible After 30 Years.
And until next week, I am quietly yours, Jack French.
Quiet Please comes to you from the Metropolitan Washington Old Time Radio Club. Your announcer was Hank Ickes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.